Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. And one of the more chilling cases, a tale of a small, sexually, mentally, and physically abusive cult that is made even more disturbing by videos recorded by the scumbag perpetrator, quote-unquote cult leader, who was so flagrant in his crimes, he was dumb enough, or cocky enough, or sociopathic enough to diligently record his abuse. But before we get into this icky beyond icky criminal, just a quick true crime news update. I don't normally do this, but I was so invested in this case. It is incredible to see an arrest made. The Delphi murders. I'm sure you guys have heard the updates as it is a heartbreaking case that has swept the nation, probably even the world, but an arrest was made. And that is some incredible movement, and I'm grateful for that, and I hope that Abby and Libby finally get justice and their loved ones finally get peace. But also, I'm going to Indiana, Greg's home state, in a few days, and I'll be there for a few weeks, and I kind of want to see how small Delphi is and the bridge where these beautiful innocent babies were abducted. Not to sensationalize it, but just to get a feel for how small this town was where a monster was hiding in plain sight. And with that being said, would you guys DM me or tag me in your Insta stories or whatever? I mean, or email me. At Seven Deadly Sinners Podcast on Instagram and at Seven Deadly Sinners Podcast at gmail.com. And let me know if you'd like me to cover the case. I know that so many people are currently covering it and have in the past, but I'm just so enthralled by it and at the same time horrified by it. But I kind of want to cover it, even though so many other podcasts have. But I'd like to hear your input if it's something you'd like to hear my take on, whatever. We'll work it out together. Just let me know. And thank you guys so much for listening. I love the cool, compassionate crowd of people that listen. You guys really are the best. So, as always, thank you so much. Okay, now for the case.
You understand? She just have wheels. What if I pick you up like that? I'm pick you up by the top of her. Huh? Do you think I'm playing with you? You're grown man, I'm a grown man. I don't like what you did. Hear me? Now one more time, I'm gonna squeak your tongue in here. Do you understand me?
Yes.
You doubting me, Danny?
No. Yes.
Doubting me?
No.
Still?
No, I know that. I know that you're leaving.
Want to doubt me more?
No.
Sloth is one of the seven capital sins in Catholic teachings. It is the most difficult sin to define and credit as a sin, since it refers to an assortment of ideas, dating from antiquity and including mental, spiritual, pathological, and physical states. One definition is a habitual disinclination to exertion or laziness. Views concerning the virtue of work to support society and further God's plan suggest that through inactivity, one invites sin, aka idle hands are the devil's workshop. The word sloth is a translation of the Latin term acedia. Spiritually, acedia first referred to becoming indifferent to a person's duties and obligations to God. In today's case, our subject was indifferent to just basic morality. Beyond that, he was indifferent to being evil. He pursued being evil, even researched how to do it. Mentally, sloth covers a lack of any feeling about self or others. Well, I'm not sure today's subject doesn't care about himself. In fact, that's the only thing he cares about. All at the expense and even torture of others. Physically, sloth is characterized by an indifference to work, and our subject, however, was not indifferent to making other people work and then return their profits back to him, because he's a classic cult leader, but on a very, very bizarre, small scale. Yet somehow he still raked in millions from his followers' efforts. I mean, how did he do this? Well, he forced them into sex work. How did he meet them? Through his college-aged daughter. This is the tale of one of the scariest guys I've encountered. And I know I say that a lot, but especially when I visually saw the torment that he perpetrated on his victims, this guy truly scared the shit out of me. This is the story of a father who moved in with his daughter in college as a 50-something-year-old man and slowly groomed her and her friends into his bizarre controlled world. From the college housing at Sarah Lawrence to an apartment in the Upper East Side of New York City, Larry Ray formed a cult of vulnerable college students turned adults who cowered to his every horrific whim. This is Larry Ray and the Sarah Lawrence Cult. It's the story of a daughter, his biggest victim of all perhaps, brainwashed into believing her father's every word, even defending him at all costs. Nothing was his fault. The government was after him. Former high-ranking friends were after him. Her own mother was after him. Talia also spoke of the conspiracy that landed him in prison. The stint just before Larry moved in with his college-aged daughter and her roommates on their campus in the middle of one of the most prestigious schools in America. And that's where he started his sloth-like evil deeds. With all of the talk of Larry's backstory before meeting him, the kids were unfazed by the fact that this legendary man would take residence with them. And then, within days after his release, that's exactly what he did. Released from prison, Larry moved in and took up court in the common area of the two-story brick dorm in the center of campus at Sarah Lawrence. Larry would regale the kids with his honorable and heroic time as a Marine and spout off Marine values and discipline. Yet, Larry, con artist Ray, spent just 19 dishonorable days, not in the Marines, but according to official records, Larry's military service was with the Air Force for that short 19 days, back in 1981. Amongst his false claims, he told the students he had negotiated a ceasefire in Kosovo and also worked as an international CIA operative. You know, if I was a betting man, which I actually kind of am, I kind of like casinos here and there, I'd be willing to bet I've spent more time in Kosovo on a military base than this man. When I did stand up for the troops there back in 2015, Larry likely has never even set foot in the country, but I digress. I just wanted to one-up the scumbag. But yes, I slept in military barracks, did stand up for the troops. That's more than Larry's. He barely, probably couldn't even pick Kosovo out on a map, all right? But where the man lacked in honesty, he made up for in charisma. Apparently, he hung around the Marines. And then this false international darling also claimed he once planned an operation to capture and extradite Assata Shakur from Cuba. Of these fictitious stories and attempts to get in with big-time political machismos, according to court documents obtained by The Cut, he even tried to get in good with post-Soviet Russia, and he repeatedly said that NATO officials had dispatched him to Moscow in 1999 to stop a bombing campaign in Kosovo, even though, by his own admission, he knew nothing about the war. But whenever someone challenged him on this claim, this is a direct quote from The Cut, Larry would present a letter written on official NATO letterhead thanking him for his quote-unquote efforts to ensure good communication and understanding between ourselves and the Russian leadership. The Cut says at least some of this is true. Quote, I remember him being around, says Chris Donnelly, the NATO official who wrote the letter. He was connected and may have made some calls for us, as many other people did at the time. I wrote a letter for anyone who was involved. End quote. I see, you're not so special, Larry. He wrote a letter for anyone that was involved. But beyond his tales of heroic fantasy land, Larry wowed the seven young, impressionable roommates of Talia with fancy takeout. He would cook them steak dinners, and then he would take them out for steak dinners, even pulling up in a limo to take them out in the city. They were fixated on this fascinating man, especially when he would name drop high-level government figures. He palled around with Mikhail Gorbachev, whom Larry met through Gorbachev's longtime interpreter, and who Larry weaseled his way into meeting Gorbachev through. And then when he flew stateside, Larry was the one to drive him around in his own car, acting as his chauffeur. And when Gorbachev took his U.S. trip to L.A., Larry even arranged a meeting with him and Robert De Niro. According to the very comprehensive article and hugely impressive investigative journalism by Ezra Marcus and James Walsh for The Cut, where much of this research came, De Niro remembers thinking it was odd that this guy was the one who'd arranged the meeting. Some of his quote-unquote connections were slightly true, but he was kind of the Cato Kalin in most of the scenarios he was involved in. And I mean that with kindness. Cato's actually a nice guy. I met him a few times when I first moved to LA, but he's still adjacent to many famous moments. And for the younger crowd, Cato lived in a guest house on O.J. Simpson's and Nicole Brown's property and was a witness in the trial, but I digress. But Larry's, let's say, a shitty Cato Kalin. Larry Ray was mostly just a grifter who attempted to latch onto anyone and everyone he thought was worth knowing. Though most of them shared the same sentiment as Robert De Niro, like, where did this guy come from? One way he did manage to hobnob with New York's elite was during his era of owning two nightclubs in the city, where he was able to rub elbows with powerful politicians and celebrities. But the average height and slightly overweight man with a Brooklyn accent and bald head was hardly a looker. But what he lacked in looks, he made up for in that classic cult leader charisma. The art of the con ran deep in him. And before he stole the innocence of his daughter's roommates, one man, in particular, fell for his con, and even became his best friend, until Larry developed a decades-long vendetta against him. Enter Bernie Carrick. According to the cut, quote, of all Larry's relationships with powerful people, one would prove the most significant in the years to come. In 1995, Larry met a young NYPD detective named Bernie Carrick. Carrick had recently been promoted from being Mayor Rudy Giuliani's driver to the director of the New York City Department of Corrections Investigations Division. Carrick was impressed by Larry, who exuded a macho, streetwise charisma and had valuable connections. The two became friends. A few years later, Larry served as Carrick's best man at his wedding. And for a time, Carrick would sign emails to Larry, quote, love B, end quote. But this bromance would only last so long. More on that in a bit, though. But let's start from the beginning for a second. Who is Larry Ray? And how did he become the monster that he did? Lawrence Greco was born in 1959 in Bay Bridge, Brooklyn, New York. He eventually changed his last name to Ray after his stepfather married his mother. And then he also started going by Larry. Like I said, in the 1980s, he owned two nightclubs in the New York area. And this is where he was able to, you know, make liaisons and hookups of sorts between powerful people. Larry felt like he was climbing the ranks of the political and social circles in New York, and he was loving every second of it. He even managed to convince the FBI that he had important information on mafia contacts. He was so convincing that the FBI took on Larry as an informant. He was, at the same time though, colluding with and participating in criminal activity with the Gambino family. Yet Larry managed to convince the FBI that he was a valuable asset to them. For a time, that is. They even bought him a $10,000 security system, as Larry had told them his life could be in danger for his efforts. But reports tell the real truth. According to The Cut, quote, the reports, however, paint Larry as an unreliable informant who dangled the prospect of critical evidence only later to obfuscate. After a few years of working with Larry, they realized that Larry had used his role as an FBI informant as a cover for his own involvement in Garofalo's, it's a Gambino Associates, scheme. In March 2000, federal prosecutors in Brooklyn indicted 19 defendants, including Larry, for their involvement in the securities fraud scheme. Larry was charged with agreeing to pay $100,000 bribe to the executive of a bond brokerage on behalf of Garofalo. Prosecutors acknowledged that Larry had provided useful background information to the FBI, but nothing that had helped the investigation in any significant way. In fact, they argued, Larry had repeatedly lied to the FBI. In court, Larry peddled his Kosovo and Russian stories, blah, 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 they're not true. But the court wasn't buying it. Larry was going to be convicted. Upon this realization, Larry begged his buddy Bernie Carrick to help him out. Do him a favor. Tell the U.S. Attorney's Office that I'm a good man. He actually specifically said, quote, please be there for me. Carrick responded the next day, quote, I would do anything for you. But Carrick's career was taking off and any misstep would destroy it. And he assumed his friend would appreciate that. So Carrick responded saying he couldn't intercede and, quote, "I'm sure you understand." Well, Larry never understood anything that didn't serve him. Larry is a monster, and Bernie would soon find out how big of one he was. Larry pleaded guilty to securities fraud, and in 2003, he was sentenced to 5 years probation. At his sentencing, the judge accused Larry of, quote-unquote, manipulating the court and promised to throw the book at him if he violated his probation. In contrast, Bernie's career was on the rise. Rudy Giuliani appointed Carrick commissioner of the Department of Correction. George Bush even nominated him to be the Secretary of Homeland Security. And this drove Larry mad. According to the cut, quote, "A week later, Carrick withdrew his nomination, citing the fact that he had once employed an undocumented nanny." 2 days after Carrick's withdrawal, the Daily News broke a story that chronicled a slew of improprieties stemming from his relationship with Larry. The story alleged that Larry had paid for Carrick's wedding, bought Carrick $4,300 worth of furniture, and had given him a customized Tiffany police badge. Larry was the story's primary source. Shocking. If revenge was what Larry was after, he got it. Carrick was publicly humiliated. The city took his name off the jail. His affair with editor Judith Reagan was made public, and he faced city, state, and federal investigations. Eventually, in 2009, Carrick pleaded guilty to felony, tax, and false statement charges and served 3 years in prison. That's according to the cut. You would think that Larry would be satisfied with his revenge plan, but he wasn't. Oh no, he just upped the ante. And Bernie Carrick would become his retaliation muse. Because Larry began using Bernie to blame anything and everything that went wrong in his life on. And his biggest mark was his daughter, Talia. And she bought every word of her dad's BS. But she was a little kid, young, impressionable. So when her larger-than-life dad told her that Bernie and other high-level officials like Rudy Giuliani were trying to poison him and kill him for information that only he knew, which could bring them down and perhaps the U.S. government, Talia believed him. He made sure that Talia became his little foot soldier, his PR person, who spewed his lies as easily as one tells the story of their dad's best high school baseball game. Talia became so indoctrinated by her father that when he was arrested in front of her when she was 15 for domestic violence, which violated his probation, in which he fled that and the government declared him a fugitive. According to the cut and the Washington Post, quote, U.S. Marshals spent weeks trying to find him. Eventually, they tracked his cell phone to his friend's apartment on East 93rd Street, which we're going to hear a ton about that apartment in next episode. 5 marshals broke down the door and found Larry and Talia inside. The marshals pinned Larry to the ground and handcuffed him, breaking his arm. According to the Washington Post, one marshal recalled hearing Talia scream, quote, "Police corruption! This is because of Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Bernie Carrick," end quote. It's just so sad. I feel so bad for her. I mean, Talia grew up thinking that there was poison in the walls of their home, in their attic, that the government was trying to kill her heroic, precious dad, and maybe even her. He was brilliant, at painting himself as a martyr. So brilliant, in fact, that he was able to convince Talia, and not as much, but still enough to regurgitate his words, his youngest daughter, that their mother had abused them their whole life. This was in retaliation to his wife Teresa filing for divorce in 2004 and for telling the police that he hit her, which I 1000% believe that he did. And if you can stomach it, watch the documentary Sex, Lies, and the College Cult, or just Google the abuse videos of Larry Ray, because what he does to these students, this man is more than capable of domestic violence. I believe in possibly murder, and I just said it, and that's okay. Is that defamation? I don't know. But he's capable of very sinister acts, and thank God, spoiler alert, he's behind bars now because he was escalating and escalating. Anyway, Teresa, his ex-wife, claimed he had hit her. But Talia, being already so brainwashed by her father's side, that when police showed up, she stood by her dad, and 15-year-old Talia then accused her mom of child abuse. According to the cut, quote, New Jersey's Child Welfare Department gave Larry temporary custody. Over the next few months, the department received multiple anonymous complaints accusing Teresa of physical and sexual abuse. Talia also accused her grandfather, cousin, and aunt of abusing her. Larry created websites and posted graphic accusations of child abuse against Teresa and her family. Often Larry's blogs featured letters supposedly written by Talia that read like journal entries, like, quote, you were the single most dangerous thing to me in my entire life. One letter to Teresa starts, end quote. CPS saw right through it. They saw right through Larry's antics, and they did a thorough investigation and found that the allegations against Teresa were unfounded. Additionally, they did a psych eval on Larry and a forensic psychological examiner, who these people are at the top of the top of their profession, stated and reported by the cut that Larry is, quote, literally impossible to evaluate, because he is able to manipulate and control almost any situation in which he finds himself, including psychological interviews with forensic examiners, no matter how experienced that examiner may be. Mr. Ray is very good at what he does, end quote. The report went on to say that Larry can, quote, be utterly charming and one can be disarmed by his childlike simplicity and smile, but Mr. Ray is no child. He is a calculating, manipulative, and hostile man. End quote. The report concluded that Larry had manipulated Talia into making abuse allegations that, quote, fit no discernible pattern ever reported to this examiner, who has been evaluating families for 20 years. The examiner found that neither Talia nor her younger sister had been abused physically or sexually, and characterized Larry and Talia's accusations against Teresa as quote-unquote rehearsed. When the examiner asked Talia's 4-year-old sister if her mother hit her, she started laughing. Quote, that's what Daddy tells me to say. End quote. Well, Larry did not accept that. Oh, no. When it was ruled that he must turn his children over to his ex-wife, he refused and then spent 6 months in jail. Talia saw this as another hero moment from her father. He, and only he, was trying to protect her. According to the cut, quote, instead of living with her mother, Talia chose to live in youth shelters. She was his soldier, says someone familiar with the divorce. Talia is a really loving person, and she is the biggest victim of all, end quote. Okay, here's the thing. I may have called him possibly mentally ill earlier, but I might retract that because Listen, I'm not an expert, so take whatever I say with a grain of salt, but he might just be in a category of his own. He's just a master manipulator, evil, selfish, vindictive troll of a man. Like, he really gives me the heebie-jeebies. And guys, I hate to break it to you, but it's going to get infinitely worse. Not necessarily in this episode, although this is disturbing. Next episode is major trigger warning. I mean, major, major trigger warning. And the videos, I mean, I had to stop watching the documentary about this. I was like, I can't watch him do this to these people. So, trigger warning. But after his divorce and release from jail, Larry began dating again. Oh, he's back out there. Don't swipe right on him, please. If you can avoid it. Although he's in jail now. Or prison. And here's where we will start to see the physical and sexual abuse of women really escalate. Cops were called to the apartment Larry was sharing with his girlfriend on reports that Larry had pinned her down and put his hands over her nose and mouth, essentially attempting to suffocate her. Larry was arrested but made bail and was able to manipulate a detective he spoke with, and according to the cut in this report, the detective wrote that Larry was, quote, currently involved in a major government investigation, and that this domestic violence incident was made up to place him in a bad light. Subsequently, his girlfriend withdrew her complaint and the case was dismissed. Larry also terrorized other girlfriends during this time. When one girlfriend tried to break up with him, he sent explicit photos to her parents. Another, he placed a GPS device on her car. Again, more foreshadowing for what's to come. Larry Ray only escalates and escalates. He was eventually arrested, however, for violating probation. But again, that arrest and prison stint didn't slow him down. Larry only morphed into the ultimate monster upon his release. Released from prison, he was like, where should I go? Where should I go? Well, the only logical answer to this conundrum would be move in with his oldest daughter, Talia, and her roommates in college. Ultimately, disrupting their entire lives. But that's just Larry's skeevy MO. Larry plopped himself right in the center of Sarah Lawrence College. Remember, his daughter had already primed her friends and roommates to be cool with this. And additionally, the kids were seeking and some suffering for various reasons. I mean, some with their mental health, some with their sexuality, and some with just basic coming-of-age stuff, like breakups and what do I want to do with my life? Well, Larry showed up armed and ready to answer all, literally all of their questions, and soothe in his own abusive way. He could soothe all of their ails. And outsiders, including their own parents, well, they were not welcome into this soon-to-be abusive Sarah Lawrence and beyond sex cult. Upon integrating himself into the impressionable teens' lives, Larry became their fixer, a chameleon. He was everything to everyone. If you were depressed, he could fix you. If you were going through heartache from a breakup, don't worry, I'll comfort you. If you were questioning your sexuality, there's some completely fucked up experiment Larry has in mind to figure that out for you. That is a true thing we will hear about next week. And because this is an extremely complicated, dark, stomach-churning, lose-all-your-faith-in-humanity case, I'm going to give you the first red flag anecdote at the end of this episode before picking up with part two, the final episode on Larry Ray, and the trigger, trigger, trigger warning episode of the century on this piece of shit. This week was to set the stage, and it was rough enough, I think. And if I gave you both at the same time, it'd be like a 3-hour episode that would be way too much to take in at once. Like I said, I had to shut the documentary off. I can't watch the videos of what he does to these people. So trust me, I know I'm sensitive, but there's not a person on this planet, besides the likes of Larry Ray, that is, that wouldn't find this all too much at once to take in. So, this guy is a modern day devil. So the first red flag anecdote before we close off this episode. Larry's first foray into the sexual abuse of these kids, his daughter's friends. I know they're over 18, but if you're a sophomore in college, you're like still a kid. You're 19, maybe 20. I mean, do you remember being a sophomore in college? You're kind of still a kid. But his initial inkling into the sexual abuse that would spiral into downright sinister status was he announced to the group that he would start sleeping in his daughter's friend Isabella's room, one of Talia's closest friends, who additionally almost looks identical to her, which is super creepy. And then when questioned about this by Talia's boyfriend, so he was kind of like, red flags are going off here. Like, why are you sleeping in a girl who's 30 years younger than you's room? Why are you even at our college, by the way? Larry said she needs someone right now. She's going through a breakup herself and, you know, she's having a hard time and I am the only one that can help her. And by the way, I'm sleeping on the floor. It's not like I'm like sleeping in her bed. Well, come to find out, eventually students and friends would walk in on Larry stroking her hair and spooning her, cuddling her, whatever, and saying, quote, "No one is going to hurt my baby girl. No one is going to hurt my baby girl." If that doesn't just chill you, I don't know what, but that is nothing compared to what we will hear next week. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm sorry if that was super dark. It's going to get way darker, but I love you and I'll see you next week. Bye. Thank you.